Today's program is brought to you by Junior's. You have not really lived until you've had cheesecake at Junior's. For more information, visit juniorscheesecake.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
To the main course on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Alexis McLaughlin, here as always with the affable Philip Gilmore.
Good morning.
Very excited. We have in-house Adam Scott Mazur and Joe Peterson. Adam Scott Mazur is the playwright behind The Tower, the psychedelic tragedy of the Donner Party. And Joe Peterson is an actor in the play, so we're going to talk to them a little bit about the story, the play, and cannibalism.
Yeah, and you know, this show is loosely focused around food, so we've justified you being on here because of, you know, for those of you don't know the Donner Party, it's, you know, some people that ate each other, and so yes.
I'd say it's more than a little loosely based around. It's kind of the main focus.
Amazing.
I learned about the Donner Party in school.
Yeah, I did
growing
too.
Up history.
Well, I knew it from the Shining. They talk about it in The Shining.
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so. I'm from California. They teach it very early on. I think it's about fourth grade state history.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they inundate you early on with the dark, dark history.
Wow. Oh, it was in California.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, right on the edge of California, Truckee.
Oh, wow, amazing. That's why whenever I take like long hikes with friends, I always bring like some of
the tastiest friends.
Not only that, I always bring some fine olive oil and some artisanal sea salt and maybe some dried herbs just in case.
Your palate is so refined. I would bring barbecue sauce.
Yeah, exactly. Or even those little miniature bottles of Tabasco. I have a whole lining in my jacket of little.
Yeah, I'd bring vodka and Frank's hot.
Yeah, right.
That is the difference between you and me.
Yeah.
I guess we'll start with Adam. Tell us a little bit about where the inspiration for Donner Party.
Yeah, right. Why would anyone write a play
sick,
about this?
Sick person.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
Unlike Joe, I really didn't know much about the Donner Party, actually. I just kind of knew that they were this group of frontier pioneers, went out west, got trapped, and then ended up eating each other. And I kind of just, that setup seemed like a cool idea for a play. Thought you'd have characters in one place going insane, drama, voila. turns out the story is way more complicated than that, and it's actually a lot less like crazy cannibals murdering each other than the sort of legend of the Donner Party would have you believe. But so the idea was to always do, like we said, the psychedelic tragedy, to have it be sort of surreal, because no one really wants to sit around and watch people going slowly starving and freezing to death for 2 hours. That's not a fun night at the theater. So we kind of like explode the minds of the characters and like travel forward and back in time and kind of like try and tell the story in a way that matches the sort of fragmented experience that these people must have been having in this like extraordinarily difficult and trying situation.
Wow.
How was the research for the project?
Oh, it was a blast. We worked with an American history PhD student, me and the director, and the three of us sort of started by bringing in a bunch of historical texts and research on cannibalism and just playing around with those with some actors. And then a few months after that, we actually went to Donner Lake, as it's now called, met with the historical society there and, you know, got a tour of the whole place and kind of experienced the atmosphere, which is really strange now because they have on one side of Donner Pass, which is the pass where they got stuck, they were trying to go through there, they now have a huge highway and a huge train track going directly through the place where the Donners couldn't pass.
And a cannibal and so, a cannibal a theme restaurant.
Well, it's actually an A&W.
Yeah. Not far.
Yeah, you're there and it's kind of all, you know, everything is kind of inherently cannibal.
Did you say A&W?
Yeah, there's an A&W there.
God, I haven't been to A&W forever. A&W.
So we kind of like read all the books we could read and like really just got obsessed with the history of the Donner Party.
What year did it happen?
It was 1846. So how many were in
the party?
There were about, I think it was 83, 87.
There's conflicting reports. I've heard 81 to 87.
Yeah, somewhere around there. And about half of them ended up surviving.
Really? 45 survivors, yeah.
And then how long were they stuck?
They were stuck. Well,
some longer than others.
Right, exactly. So they got stuck around early November because the winter came early. They were way behind on their journey. Everyone else, all the other westward emigrants had already made it over the pass. They got stuck in early November and were there essentially.
And obviously snow, a blizzard.
Yeah, super early snowstorm in the Sierra Nevadas. And they were there till about February, most of them.
Wow.
And then there were sort of the comedy of errors of relief parties that came to rescue them and then had to be rescued by other relief parties. Wow. It was a mess.
How do relief parties know that they're there? Because they never made landing.
Well, so, yeah, several reasons.
They're not paging people.
So, it was pretty early on in the westward expansion process, so everyone kind of knew that they were the last family groups on the trail. So they kind of knew that, like, where are these people after they didn't get there in mid-November.
There were members of the party that did make it to California that had ridden ahead.
I was just going to say, there's probably, when you have a group of 90 people, there's probably, you know, a single dude and then a family of 10 that, you know, the single dude said, see ya, I'm going to go ahead.
Yeah, Joe especially has has some insight as to the other way that they knew that they were stuck.
Yeah, I don't know how spoiler sensitive you wanted to be for this.
I mean,
one of the characters I play is James Reed, who was exiled from the party for killing another guy in the party.
Not related to food.
Totally unrelated.
Totally unrelated.
It was way before they got stuck. Yeah. It was an argument over some oxen in a hill and some oxen on a hill. They were supposed to be double teaming the oxen. This one guy got cocky, didn't do it, tangled up the oxen.
Yeah.
They got into a physical altercation. James Reed's wife stepped in and got hit, and he got angry and stabbed the guy.
Oh, wow.
In a moment of passion.
Nice.
And then they exiled him, which was supposed to essentially be a death sentence.
Yeah.
They sent him ahead with no food. But secretly, his daughter and somebody else rode out and gave him some food. So he was, you know, it was not easy, but he was able to make it out to California before they did.
Yeah, wow. So he was just kind of sitting there. Well, actually, not just sitting there. He got caught up in the Spanish-American War, or the Mexican-American War, that was going on at the time, and had to, like, essentially drafted into that. Meanwhile, the whole time, he knows that his family and the other family groups that they were traveling with were just stuck and not arriving. So he's trying to get people together to go back. So he then was he led the second relief party to come back and rescue people from Donner Lake.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was, I think, four total relief parties, if you count the final.
Right. Which is more like a looting party. Yeah. The last one was.
And then out of the 40 people that perished, how many were eaten?
Well, that's hard to know. It's hard to know because not only two people were murdered to be eaten.
People that were murdered.
There were, in fact, two people.
Before we get in, is there any contention that cannibalism happened?
No, it's 100% certain. Yeah, okay. There's no way that they could have survived without it, essentially.
There were members of the party that denied it, and it's possible that there were some members that didn't have to eat people to survive.
Right.
But many did.
Almost certainly. Yeah, almost all did. So there were really two groups, and this is sort of the story of the play. They all got stuck at what is now Donner Lake, and then a small group of them, 15 in reality, in history, went across the mountains in like this desperate search for help to try and make it to the fort just past it. And that was sort of where the worst of the cannibalism occurred. Of those 15, eight people died, and I think all but the first guy that died were eaten.
Wow.
And that's where the murders occurred as well.
Yeah, they had two Native American guides with
them. Yeah, that actually had come back from the fort, because another guy, Charles Stanton, had rode ahead to the fort earlier on because they knew they were running out of food, came back just in time to get stuck with everyone else in the snowstorm. Wow. And along with him came these two Native American guides, Luis and Salvador. And so, and as the snowshoer party, the going across the mountains went more and more insane. Eventually, this one guy, William Foster, was like, "Well, let's shoot the Indians. That's clearly the option that we should take here."
Classic American racism.
Yeah.
Great briskets, though. Great briskets.
Yeah. You use the whole body.
Yeah.
Quintessential story of the American West here.
Corn fed.
Yeah. Right. And
maize fed.
Maize.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, maize.
And so, yeah, and so almost everyone that died on that journey was eaten. And then back at the cabins, it took much longer. You know, they, like, boiled hides down to make, like, a glue soup that they ate for several months.
Of people eating their shoelaces.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Anything that was even remotely edible was eaten. And then they resorted to cannibalism. So most, they think that pretty much everyone there as well by the end. By the time February came or so, they were all pretty much eating the frozen corpses that were left behind in the snow.
Yeah.
Some of the more tragic stuff definitely happened on the snowshoer journey.
Yeah. Because
they took a terribly wrong turn. They were actually very close and then just veered south. They thought, oh, this looks easier to go over here.
Yeah.
But they were actually pretty close to Johnson's Ranch, which was the first settlement in California to get to.
They just kind of missed because it was snowing, or
they were snowing. They were starving. They were losing their minds, and they were having a tough time. They were having trouble walking. Their shoes were flaps, if anything, like just falling apart. And some of the darkest stuff, stuff that we don't get to in the play. Like Franklin Graves was 50 something. He was the oldest snowshoer. He died on Christmas Eve, and his daughter and her new husband were there. And he said, "You have to use me for meat. You must, you must." And they did. They actually worked out a system because there were several dead at that point, and they had stopped because they didn't know where they were going and they were starving. And so they worked out a system where no one ate a relative of theirs. But they all got to eat.
Wow.
I think the darkest is about a week later, his daughter, Sarah Fosdick, who was Franklin Graves' daughter, her husband, her newlywed husband, this was essentially their honeymoon. They got married right before they left. He dies next to her at night and while they're sleeping. And she comes out of the mountains, and two of the other members were like, "Hey, what's going on?" She's like, "He died." And they basically just said, can we eat him? And, and her line was, "Well, you can't hurt him anymore."
Yeah.
And so that later that night, they actually literally roasted his heart in front of her at the campfire and ate it.
Oh, but that's kind of a special, I guess, you know?
Well, there's a poetry to it, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. I had his heart in life, and then I had his heart in death.
She did not eat the heart. The Fosters ate the heart.
He was good in the sack, and he was good on the spit roast.
The legend of Jake Foster.
This is where the show starts getting dark. When you guys were researching for the play.
Oh no, don't say it. When you were researching for the play,
are there other stories like, you know, with cannibalism like this? I'm not really familiar with other instances, other popular famous historical tales.
I was gonna ask you, did you guys ever see the movie Keep the River to the Left?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, it's the best. It's like this young Jewish kind of Allen Ginsberg type of poet guy from the East Village. He goes down and does a like guided tour of the Amazon, and something happens where he almost dies, and this tribe saves him, and he becomes part of the tribe for a few years. And two of the things about the tribe that's interesting, first of all, they're cannibals, and the other thing is that oddly enough, this guy was homosexual as well, and this is like I guess in the late 50s or early 60s or something, and so this tribe, though, you have a wife and you fall in love with her, and then your wife is for to have children, but then you also have a male. A male soulmate that's your true love, and it's like and then you're in a homosexual relationship with this soulmate of yours, and this guy ends up having one of those, and he has this relationship with this guy for a couple of years, and then I guess tries some human meat along the way, but then he gets found and rescued, and then so he goes back. So he goes back to the tribe 40 years later, and then his soulmate dude is still alive, and you get to see them going like, oh my God, and they're still in love 40 years later.
Oh, wow.
It's so amazing. It's called Keep the River to the Left.
Wow. And is this based on any kind of historical event?
It's a documentary. Yeah, it's a documentary. You actually get to see the guy go back and meet the tribe, and they all remember him and everything.
That is quite a doozy of a story. Wow.
That's a doozy, and it's a documentary, man. It's not even a... Yeah.
Yeah. Fodder for the next play.
No kidding.
That's not a bad idea, right?
Go do some research.
Yeah. What other cannibal stories are
Yeah,
there?
Well, I mean, there's a ton. There's a ton.
Survival cannibalism is actually pretty common, mostly at sea.
Yeah.
What's the Ethan Hawke movie?
Alive.
Reality Bites.
Reality Bites.
Yeah, but cannibalism, I mean, part of the point of the play is that cannibalism has always had a distinctly American bent to it. And so recently, I don't know if you guys saw this, but sort of indisputable evidence came out that the settlers at Jamestown were cannibals.
Oh wow!
Because early on in the early colonies in Virginia, there just wasn't enough food. They just didn't have enough food. So they, John Smith from Pocahontas was definitely eating people all the time. and so I think part of what the play is about is this sort of essence of American history that in general is sort of like pushed to the side. It's like, oh, the Donner Party is a mistake, it's the cautionary tale. But actually cannibalism is as American as apple pie.
How the West was won.
Yeah.
Well, also,
yeah,
you can extrapolate like the current political climate.
Well, yeah, too. I mean,
cannibalism runs deep in this country.
It's a metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I got to give a shout out to this podcast that I've been listening to, and it relates to what we're talking about. But have you guys heard Dan Carlin's Hardcore History?
Yeah. No.
It is the it's literally there's a five he does like one thing. So like the one I'm listening to now is it's about Genghis Khan, which is actually pronounced Genghis Khan. It's pronounced Genghis Khan, but it's like so he just takes that one guy, and it's like five part series, 2.5 hours each episode.
Oh wow.
And I have listened to it over, and I'm probably on like listening to it like probably on my 10th time. Like it's so fucking intense. But they actually talk about cannibalism. The Mongols, like they ran out of food, they would just kill somebody and eat them.
what was their choosing process for that?
What's that?
How did they choose who would get eaten?
Can I tell you, like I don't know how much you know about Genghis Khan.
Not
but
a ton.
Like literally they
I
would
saw that
go
Marco
in
Marco Polo show.
Yeah. They would go into a town, and they would be like, and I'm talking like at the time some of the largest cities in the world, like 200,000 people in China. And they'd go in and be like, okay, we'll absorb your army. Your army will fight for us. You can keep your land, or we will rape and murder everybody that you've ever known and everybody in this entire city. And sometimes they would be like, okay, we'll fight for you. And be like, we changed our mind. And then they would just literally burn the city to the ground. And I'm talking about the most modern, largest cities in the world. They would go in and just fuck everybody up.
That's not a good set of options.
Yeah, they think it's between 30 and 60 million people. Yeah, and one I think it's something like one out of 160 people have his blood in him.
Heard that.
Yeah, or like one in 50 people, something crazy, because he raped so many people personally that it's like he's the one, like he's the Alpha and the Omega with the gene pool. Yeah.
That's insane.
Good times.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you guys get a chance, man, the Dan Carlin's hardcore history. Shout out to him, and it's the best.
What other topics does he do?
He does one. There's one about the Spartans. There's one about... you know, I have to get his paid one because I'm just on this free iPod or iCast podcast thing. So I only have like 10 episodes right now. But
wait, there's more. Just send $9.99.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's worth it. He's like, and he really, he goes really deep into the subject. He's like, it's almost like a international equivalent. You know, the people's history in the United States, how it's in, you know, how he doesn't just objectively, there's no opinions here. This is what happened. So he really tells it how it is with, and it's not like, you know, he doesn't get too like specific and grotesque, but just objectively, he raped these people. You know,
I wonder if he has done or will do a Donner Party one.
Oh, that's interesting. Love that. Oh my God, that'd be amazing.
It's such an insane story.
There's some great books out there. Mm-hmm. I read a couple. The one I highly recommend was called The Indifferent Stars Above, and that book focuses on the characters I was talking about earlier. Like characters, like they're in a play. The people. this is a play that we're doing, but. It was Sarah Fosdick and the Newlyweds and the Graves family.
Wow.
But you get everybody's story. It's way in depth, and it's really interesting.
When you went out to the lake, Donner Lake and Donner Pass, and there's a historical society. Is there? I'm not even saying this funny. Like, was there like half-eaten shoelaces, or like there are there? You know, are there? Is there like a display of actually like anything, like a piece of paper, or like?
They have certain artifacts and things. They don't really have a ton that they can direct. Directly connect to the cannibalism, you know? But they did have, like, they had, like, the rifle that one of the members of the party used to shoot a bear early on when they were there that provided a lot of food for the snowshoer party for a while.
And photographs? Are there any...
They have photographs of some of the people after they arrived because it was a little early for photography.
No Polaroids back then?
Yeah, sadly not.
Well, they also have Patty Reed's doll. Right?
They do have Patty
Reed's
doll.
One of the more touching stories, she was an 8-year-old. She's a daughter of James and Margaret Reed. And they were...
The granddaughter of the guy who killed the guy?
The daughter.
The daughter of
Yeah. So when they were in the Great Salt Desert, they pretty much ditched most of their stuff, and they told all the kids, "You got to get rid of everything." And she had this little doll that she slipped into her like sleeve to hide, so she could always have a toy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it made it through the whole entire debacle, and they have the toy, and they sell little replicas of the toy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we were in the eye of the mind of God, we would know that it was some sort of cursed, cursed little, bad spirit, all that actually brought that caused all of everything
this,
that happened.
This graven image of a person means you will eat people.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, a person inside the person.
I guess let's go ahead and take a little break, and then we'll be back to talk more about the play.
Awesome.
Cool. All right.
Let's play a game. If I say three words, let's say Brooklyn, classic, food. You tell me what comes to mind. I'll give you a second. If the answer wasn't Junior's, you lose the game. You can't possibly be a Brooklyn foodie, or a foodie at all for that matter, and not know about Junior's. Founded by Harry Rosen in 1950, Junior's landmark restaurant is known as the home of New York's best cheesecake. Real talk, you have not fully lived unless you've had Junior's Cheesecake. The original location in Brooklyn on Flatbush Avenue is still thriving, or you can check them out at recent landmark additions in New York's Grand Central Terminal or in the heart of the Theater District on Broadway and Times Square. Check out their first restaurant outside of New York at the Fox Tower Hotel at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut. It's not just cheesecakes. They've got steak, seafood, sandwiches, salad, everything you would possibly need to complete an authentic New York dining experience. Don't be embarrassed next time somebody asks you if you've been to Junior's. Visit juniorscheesecake.com for more information.
This is Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot on Heritage Radio Network, and I'd like you to become a member. By giving us some of your hard-earned money, you make this radio station possible. And that means that you have good food content to listen to when you're cooking, when you're cleaning, when you're commuting. And it means that we have a place to come every week and make that content for you. So go to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the little beating heart, show us some love, and have a wonderful holiday season.
Welcome back to the main course. I am still Alexis McLaughlin, here with Philip Gilmore, joined with by Joe Peterson and Adam Scott Mazur. But
you know, talking about all this food, you know what I could go for right now?
What are you hankering for?
Some original New York style cheesecake.
But where would you find it?
my brother Alan Rosen's got a little shop downtown in Brooklyn called Junior's Cheesecake, and it is the best. Biggie Smalls used to eat there. What else do you need to fucking know? Come on. Yeah. And when he had him on the show, he was talking about jerk chicken, which jerk chicken is probably, at the end of the day, my favorite food in the world. And he swears that they have the great jerk chicken there. So I have to go and get some.
Yeah, but you should go check it out.
Well, the guy, Alan Rosen, he's literally the, you know, grandson of the, you know, the Junior Cheesecake Empire. Now he runs the whole show. He brought us like 5 cheesecakes, and we took them next door to Momo's and just slaughtered them, and they were so good.
It was
amazing.
Actually,
you know what's surprising?
There's not a competition for being the best guest ever, guys.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you did not bring us cheesecake.
We forgot to bring the human meat. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's really cool. We're really excited
after
the show.
And they're sponsoring the show.
Yeah, they became brand new sponsors.
Yeah.
Which brings us into, if you've made it this far and you're still listening, thank you.
And you haven't vomited from the topic.
Which has been intense. We appreciate you sticking with us. Yeah. But we'd also like you to consider becoming a member this season, which is really easy. You can go to the website. Any bit helps. $5, $10. We encourage you to become, you know, a
hundo.
Yeah, $100, $60.
G-Stack, Mill.
Buy a membership
whatever.
For someone in your family that likes.
What a great Christmas present.
It is great.
Yeah.
It's like,
yes.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah,
Here's your membership.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's really cool. There are benefits. There's a host cookbook. There's a lot of behind the scenes access, and it goes to supporting the network. And we couldn't do it without the support. We have a $100,000 goal this season, and we're getting there.
Yeah.
I know we're over halfway to the goal.
And also for
great.
The listeners out there that have children, you have spoiled them enough, and they think they're going to get the Xbox, so they don't deserve it. You should disappoint them this season and get your child a subscription to Heritage Radio and be a donor. Make a donation in their name. Show them that this season is about giving and it's not all about them and their selfish needs. So I think everybody out there should buy their children. You know, donate in the name of your children. Skip the Xbox.
Okay.
In the long run, I feel like they'd appreciate it more.
Yes,
than like
exactly.
Tickle Me Elmo.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the hot thing
yeah,
is now.
In retrospect, it'll make them tougher and they'll be full of disappointment.
They will say they hate you in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. But they'll appreciate it in retrospect.
So super easy. Go to heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the little beating heart in the corner. Phil, I'm calling you out. I don't know if you have re-upped your membership yet. I did.
You did? Really?
I did. Yeah.
I thought I was grandfathered in.
No.
I buy me.
Uh-huh.
I buy me.
Uh-huh.
And then I host the show.
Totally separate things.
Oh, should I be? I didn't know I was supposed to. I thought. Just
either money or cheesecake.
You mean that's what you're doing immediately after the show's
no,
over?
No, no.
I
brought my face to this radio show.
But yeah, so membership pledge over.
Pledge.
Yeah. Thanks, guys, for that. But don't stop listening. We're going to go back and talk with Adam and Joe some more about the tower, the psychedelic tragedy of the Donner Party. And I guess I directed a little bit to Joe now. Because you got in, you became involved as an actor. Did you and Adam know each other before? Was this?
No, actually, he mentioned earlier that they were working with a PhD student in American history who focuses on the Donner Party. It's an old roommate of mine, and she had a birthday. And so all the play people came over because they had started doing workshops. And Adam found out I was an actor and said, oh, I just rewrote it. There's a new character. We need to cast it. You should come audition for it. So
awesome.
It just kind of fell into my lap.
Did you have a history bent before the play? Because you speak you know, like you're really fresh on all these topics and like you enjoy that aspect of research and learning.
Most assuredly, yeah. I was a history minor for a time in college, as I think many people were. but yeah, it's part of my California heritage, knew about it early on. So it's always been an interesting topic. But I didn't know nearly as much about the Donner Party before joining up with this and doing all the research and just learning all these dark, dark details. And it's just fascinating. I mean, how could you not be fascinated by this story, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that historically cannibalism in like the context of
survival,
world history,
survival cannibalism
occurred on ships.
Yeah, when there would be shipwrecks and there would be lifeboats, they would often resort to choosing someone. And there's one of the books talked about how it varied as to who, if whether or not they would be held accountable for these actions at sea. A lot of times they were not, because the people kind of understood that, well, I mean, you lived and that guy didn't, but if you hadn't eaten him, nobody would have lived. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there were certain instances of persecution of these people that did.
This is, and I know this is getting a little dark into the topic, but because, you know, this has occurred many times in history, is there a tradition on how to treat and prepare? Or, I mean, do's and don'ts? Because that's an important part of food. Like,
yeah.
Eat this part, not that part. Do this with it, not that. And how do you cook something on a lifeboat?
Well, they were eating them raw on the boats there. The most common, they talk about the most common method would be to cut off the head, the hands, and the feet.
We really should have given this episode a little disclaimer before.
Well, because those are the...
Liz is making appetizing faces in the studio this entire time. Thanks for putting up with this.
So you remove the head, the hands, and the feet in order to dehumanize the meat that you're going to consume.
Mm.
But the vital organs that will spoil first are often eaten first. Heart, kidney, liver, brains. And then you go in on the leg meat and the arm meat.
So I guess you really just use knowledge of, you know, eating animals.
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. And I mean, different cultures have sort of different ways of doing it. If cannibalism is a part of their culture, like in Papua New Guinea, you know, what is the disease called? Do you remember?
I don't recall the name of the disease, but that's a different.
There's some weird thing. I know about this.
You can. There's like a virus or a parasite, I think, that's transmittable only through the brain.
Yeah.
So.
But that's. I mean, I remember you telling me this one time.
I think it's called brain to mouth disease. No, I'm just kidding.
It's like the human version of mad cow.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Adam ran down the three different types of cannibalism: the survival cannibalism, ritualistic cannibalism, and psychosexual.
Right. This was actually kind of the way we approached the way that we approached sort of cannibalism in general in the play is we started by sort of looking at the ways cannibalism occurs, and there are those three, right? So there's survival, people on boats usually. There's psychosexual, which are serial killers, Jeffrey Dahmer and all that. And then there's ritual, and ritual has been maybe the longest kind of cannibalism. You know, prehistoric people practice this at times.
Right when you were talking about that, that's very interesting, the three different types. I was thinking specifically about the play and the Donner Party and the way that you've been talking about it, you know, especially with, like, you know, the eating the husband's heart and then all this thing, like, because they're already going crazy.
Yeah.
And their decision to eat each other kind of is based not only on survival and then kind of they're kind of going crazy, but then also too, there's some sort of like beautiful ritualistic thing to it.
Absolutely.
So it's like you're talking about the three, and I'm thinking like the Donner Party, it's like almost they're in a specific situation where like almost all three are kind of involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's
kind of the base of the play.
Encapsulate.
Yeah. Amazing.
All those kind of bubble up.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Lest we forget to plug the play.
Right.
It's at Here Arts Center in Soho, right off the Spring Street ACE stop.
What's the address?
145 6th Avenue in Manhattan.
Nice.
And we run for one more week. We're today at 4 o'clock and then Tuesday through Saturday at 8:30 p.m.
And give the dates for people catching this at a different time.
Dates are the last day is the 19th of December.
December.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what date today is, really. But what, today, what day is today? We have Monday off basically every day from now.
13th.
Okay. Today's the 13th.
So the 13th through the 19th with the 14th off is the only non-day.
Amazing. Yes. How big is the theater? How many people do you hold?
Probably about 60-ish. The show is sort of staged in a really, in a pretty unique way. It's environmental, so there are some seats, but you're encouraged to move around. Mm-hmm. So you know, you're encouraged to get up and get a better view of a scene if it's happening in a place where you can't really see. So we can, you know, we can kind of fit a fair number of people, and then they just adjust. You know, you're encouraged to not be just sitting in one seat.
And how long is it?
It's about 2 hours.
About 2 hours.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, and there's no intermission, so if you come, please urinate beforehand. And don't come too drunk like one of my friends did.
Stumbling over the set, yeah.
Speaking of people going crazy in the Midwest and camping, I knew this guy from the neighborhood, but we kind of bonded because I went to a Doug Stanhope show, and he was hanging out there.
And Joe?
Yeah, me and Joe. And so I went with Tom Hathaway, and then we ended up seeing him in the after party thing, like they met at the bar. But I guess you went camping, right?
Yeah, it was an annual camping trip out in Death Valley in California.
Yeah.
Got involved through a friend of a friend, met Doug Stanhope after one of his shows.
Yeah.
He said, hey, you should come on out to the desert. And I went for, I think, 3-4 years. Every year. It was just
amazing.
Just a magical mushroom-filled
journey.
And about four or five days.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know Doug Stanhope, he's probably maybe the best living comic, in my opinion. Yeah, he's pretty great. Awesome. He's so good.
Yeah, he's a cult figure.
He's a cult figure. He's almost like eating human meat. Not for everybody. not for everybody. Yeah.
Got that extra little taste.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of which, the actual taste of, you know, I just thought of this. Actual taste of human meat is said to be like a combo between pork and veal.
Well, there's a few different accounts. We actually did a bunch of research on this as well.
Oh, Issei Sagawa.
Famous cannibal, still alive, free, not in prison or anything.
South American?
No. Issei Sagawa, he's Japanese.
He
murdered a woman in Germany, I believe, in the 80s, I think it was. Yeah. And then ate her because he had always had these like cannibalism fetishes. And he ate her raw, and he described it as being like tuna sushi.
He said it melted in my mouth.
Raw
tuna.
Yeah, it was the quote.
How is he free?
Crazy legal loopholes is how he's free.
Wow.
I love him.
Yeah. And then other people have described it as similar to veal or pork, but a little more. There's like a strange taste to it. They say kind of like the texture and feel of pork, but just a little bit different. Yeah, they call it long pork. Is one of the old names for it, right?
In the scene,
in the scene.
I can't help. I'm like making faces this entire show.
That's awesome. Do you have any after this? Are you just going to go sleep for
a
few months?
That's kind of the plan. Yeah,
is this your first play?
No. My company, our company, Antimatter Collective, has done. I mean, we've done, I guess, four or five major productions over the last 5 years or so. This is the third play I've written for them.
Yeah.
So I've got ideas for the next one. We'll see. For right now, this is the project of the year. This is the biggest show we've ever done.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one more time, where do you find tickets for the show?
Tickets for the show, your best option is just to go to our website, antimattercollective.org, or you can also go to the theater's website, here.org.
And that's H-E-A-R?
No, H-E-R-E.
H-E-R-E.
Yeah, here.org or antimattercollective.org. Both of them have links to the ticketing page.
Awesome. Everybody go see this.
Yeah, I'd recommend getting tickets in advance because as we near the end of the run, all the people that slacked on it are going to run.
Like us, like me and Alexis.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Yeah, this
in the studio.
Has been awesome.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Appreciate and sharing all of your collective knowledge, history, and research on this taboo topic.
Yeah.
I think we need to go back and put a disclaimer in the show from the start. Yes. Please don't listen with children.
I think this is a record for profanity. I think we had very little profanity. I think it was a pretty clean show.
I wasn't
was
aware that story. I didn't know that. Yeah. I could fucking swear on this thing?
Yeah.
Damn, man.
Found out too late.
Well, no, we'll try to make up for it. Yeah.
Right. All right, guys. Thank you so much. And go donate today if you haven't yet. And happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Come see the play.
Yeah.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.